podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to episode 334 of the Anfield Index podcast, and the first of our new season with actual games to look forward to, not even one to talk about, of some sort of merit at least. So for this episode, like I say, the first of a new campaign, I'm joined by Lisa Marie Hannan and Guy Drinkle to discuss whatever it is we get around to discussing. And because it is what it is, and because we're in a new season, this will be a little bit more, I'd imagine, football centric and focused and heavy than some of the ones recently have been. But then again, let's not make any mad predictions around those type of things. Lisa Marie, how have you been during the week? How are things for you? And have you got anything to start us with?
Well, it is a day of joys and sorrows here in the Hanahan household. That is, it is the first day of school for...
Oh, that's got to sting.
Not to me, but to child 2 and 3. I would not say they went skipping happily out the door this morning. Mm. There was lots of moaning and complaining. So, yeah. So along those lines, the first day of school, the day when the countdown to the last day of school begins. An unknown quote, but yeah.
Yeah, that's so heartening for a teacher to hear those words. And yet, you know.
Now, I don't know about you, Trev. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I know quite a few teachers. In fact, both my sister-in-laws have taught. Sometimes I think the teachers look as forward to the end of the school year, if not more so sometimes, than the students do. Just saying.
That's absolute heresy. As a dedicated teacher, I resent that intensely and completely
fail. Well, then I think that's great. I think that's absolutely wonderful that you just don't want to see your students go. You enjoy them so much.
Yeah, okay. You've already taken it too far there. Actually, before we move on, Guy, seeing as you've only just left school and all, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Can you remember? Can you remember the to be honest, I'll have to admit, I never mind going back, and our holidays are a little bit longer even than what you guys have, and certainly longer than what Lisa Marie's kids have.
Now my kids have been out since like the third week of May, to be fair, but yeah.
Oh, they have.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah,
part-time.
It's time for them to go back. Trust me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, part time. But what I was queuing up to ask you guys: do you remember that feeling going back? I will admit, it never bothers me because we do have such a long break here, and I am a creature of habit, so I don't mind going back. But I do recall the feeling of dread. It was for me. It wasn't so much going back in September. It was the Sunday night feeling, you know, oh Christ, the weekend's over. That I can remember, but going back to school didn't bother me. What about yourself?
Probably the only time was when I was jumping year 6 to 7, because it was a different school and stuff like that. But my school was odd, because jumping from primary school to secondary school, which for Lisa Marie in American terms is it preschool or high school, or is there another one in between? I'm not sure.
Well, it might be probably that. It's middle school. So middle like school. Okay. What you all call primary school, we call elementary school.
That's the one.
And then, yeah. And then secondary school, to me, kind of, and I'm sure it varies a little, but it's kind of like middle school and high school put together.
Yeah. So it's like, I think it's 10 to 15 secondary school, I think.
Well, they count it a little bit differently here, but yeah.
Yeah.
Secondary school or middle school is 6 to 8. So like 11 to 13, 14. And then high school is, 14, 15 to 18. So, and just in context, I have an eighth grader this year and I have a senior in high school this year. So it's going to be a crazy busy year with all that stuff come May. So, oh,
beautiful. Yeah. And absolutely zero tension around the house, no doubt. because that's how it goes. That's how it goes when you have teenagers under pressure. It's just calm. It's just calm. It's a lovely, lovely, lovely calm thing to be around. Now, Guy, you've often...
You were saying, sorry, Guy.
I was just going to say, the only strange thing for me, when I went to year seven, I was going into the school building that like has been in my town for donkey's years. Like my parents went to that school.
Yeah.
Then in year eight, I got one of them new build, basically IKEA schools, which is made out of like styrofoam and shit, basically. So it's like the first, like my year seven year, where it was like the school from the Victorian age, you had to like to get upstairs, you had to go through like stairs on one half of the building, then across the other, up on the roof, and then go through classrooms unless you went up like a corner set of stairs, which was basically a fire escape. So it was basically a health hazard. But yeah, it was odd for me because it was going up to a different school, then it was going to a different building. And then by that time you're in year nine and you're like, why am I wearing a blazer? I look like a prick. And we had the worst shade of blue blazers as well. It was fucking horrible.
That whole blazer thing that you guys do over there, always, it's always jarred.
I wish all the schools had uniforms over here. You know, only the private schools do. And I'm now that, you know, daughter is of an age, I miss school uniforms. I'm just going to say, but anyway.
I
refer amazing. You to the picture I posted on Twitter today, and you can see what my two children went off to school in the first day.
Excellent. Guy, you've not normally got something very, very highbrow and artistic to begin us with. Is that the case again this week? Yeah,
I do. I have the most ambitious crossover in cinema history. We're not talking Alien versus Predator. We're not talking Marvel versus DC or any jazz like that that could potentially happen. We have Lake Placid versus Anaconda.
Wow. Now, I have to say, in different ways, I enjoyed both of those. Anaconda's patently awful, but I don't...
Ice Cube and John... Is it John Voight? Voight? How have you pronounced it?
John Voight. And yes. I think it's in Thingy. Jennifer Lopez in it as well, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think she is.
So,
I've seen Anaconda, but I've never seen Lake Placid.
Oh, it's dreadful. It's fantastic.
Oh, but you know, Lake Placid... knows it's awful and as a result is better for it, whereas Anaconda doesn't know it's awful. I that would be my take on it. Or I really love Lake Placid. I think I've seen it about three or four times. It's really good. But how does this work, man? Give us some details.
Well, Trev, would this shock you that this is the fifth film in both these series?
What?
I believe I've seen three Anaconda movies, but I didn't realize there was this was the fifth for both of them. Would you like to know the tagline?
Love to.
Crocs on the dock, snakes on the lake. And do you know who's starring in this film? Just for horror film buffs.
Go on.
Robert Englund.
Oh, God.
Yes.
All right.
Recently, Freddy yes. Krueger, obviously, but obviously of Stranger Things fame in last year.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So, yeah, obviously got the big hitter there. Clearly used all the budget on Robert. That's looking at the trailer.
I was going to say, I think Bob's using up all the money that would have gone to effects. So I can only imagine what this thing looks like.
So the description reads, a giant crocodile goes head-to-head with a giant anaconda. The town sheriff must find a way to destroy the two monsters before they kill the whole town.
All the best, Sheriff.
Yeah. And the poster is... the anaconda wrapped round the crocodile whilst the anaconda's got a half-naked lady eating
of course.
Her. Yes, of course. Yes. Fantastic.
Oh, well, okay. Well done. That's yet another Classic. I hope you're all making notes at home that you've got a playlist.
3.2 on IMDb.
3.2.
Ooh, 3.2.
I mean, it's I've seen worse. So
we talked about worse last week. I believe last week's selection was a 2.2.
That was history though. Not everyone wants to be educated.
That's true. Yeah, not everyone's into that historic genre. Good call.
Yeah, that's people hate hearing the facts, you know. It really upsets them. They just can't live with it. They can't handle the truth. I have something for you as well before we get started talking about Liverpool. And this is football related, just to, by way of making some sort of effort to tie us back into that. This is a little 2 minute, 20 second story told by a guy called Mark Crossley, who used to play for Nottingham Forest in the Brian Clough era. And it's a Brian Clough anecdote. And Lisa Marie, I know that even though you weren't following football at that time, you have a bit of an info about Clough from listening to me and Dave wittering about
him. And I have the book that you all talked about on the books. I started reading it, but have not finished it yet. But yes.
Well, this little story is I just think very entertaining. A character you'll be familiar with again in his later iteration as an action movie star is Vinnie Jones. And Vinnie Jones, of course, Vinnie Jones began his days as a player for Wimbledon Football Club, who were notoriously, let's just say, wild and untamed. And they had a reputation for intimidation and violence and all sorts. This little story is just how Vinnie Jones, the figurehead and central character of Wimbledon, fared in his little matchup with Brian Clough. So have a listen to this.
I'll tell you what else he did at home, Cluffy. We played Wimbledon at home. I remember this. And they were first team to come with Ghetto Blaster. Vinnie's walked in with on his fucking shoulder, like, you know what I mean? Vinnie Jones.
Is this crazy gang.
We're playing them at Forest. Anyway, Ghetto Blaster's going down, and you can see he's like thinking, what the fuck was that? And he's stopped and he's gone, Illy, to Anglin Hill. Would you go and knock on their fucking dressing room door and ask them to turn that fucking music down? So Anglin Hill goes down and he knocks on the door. Yep, and Vinnie Jones opened the door, he's captain of Wimbledon, and he stood there in a pair of slips, like, growling at fucking Alan Hill, like. And Alan Hill's gone, listen, Vinnie, would you mind turning the music down? That gaffer don't like it. So Vinnie's gone, yeah, no problem. So turns it down. Alan Hill comes back up to the dressing room. Of course, what happens? They turn it even louder, don't they? Illy! This time, would you say, please, can you turn the music down? So he goes down and says, please, Mr. Jones, can you turn the music down?
Oh, he's actually gone again?
Gone again.
Oh, he must have been walking from dressing room to dressing room.
Thumbs down again. A minute, he's got a smirk on his face, it's really like, you know. And so he turns it down, comes back up, starts again. So this time he gets up. And he fucking walks down that corridor, knocks on the door, opens the door, Vinny. He walks in their dressing room. Well, this is fucking 10 to 3, by the way. Picks the Ghetto Blaster up, smashes it. Now play your fucking music, Wimbledon. Comes back up to our dressing room.
I did enjoy that. I thought that might amuse you folks. We said we'd do a few kind of specific things, and obviously with the season starting, there's no end of detail that we could get into. And I mean, I want to leave this a little bit loose. I don't want to be too prescriptive, but if we can just maybe make our way through a couple of topics. And before we do, in absentia today, obviously, is Carl Kopak, who posted a picture in our group during the week of a celebrating shirtless Darwin Nunez after the, I keep calling it Charity Shield, I'm so old, the Community Shield match where he'd scored, and it was a wonderful moment for us all and all the rest of it. And there's young Kopac, of course, in the background, in the crowd, duly circled. And I thought we'd give him a shout out. But similarly, there's another picture of a Naby Keita looking disinterested and not paying attention to Carl and his pals as they try to grab that attention, and some nice pyro going off in the background as well. So some nice reminders from Carl to us that he's actually at the game, and I did want to duly mention the fact that he had supplied us with those images, and that he couldn't make it this evening because he's off actually playing football, I believe. So fair play to him, hopefully that goes well.
A weirdo. Who plays football? We watch and talk about it.
Exactly. strange behaviour. By the way, are you still doing your five-a-side guy?
Unfortunately not, because my mate who basically, well, drove and set it up, he joined the army, so he buggered off like a selfish prick.
That's unbelievable.
What a bastard.
Actually, I mean, just literally no consideration for you. Yeah. Let's focus on that Community Shield game for a few minutes, not because we want to do any deep analysis of it, but because, like I said to Jan last night, it's nice to be able to look back on it and it to have gone very well for us in terms of a little bit of a possible mild advantage, and certainly none accrued. If you recall, that's all I was worried about when we spoke last week, was that City would accrue some advantage. They didn't. And Lisa Marie, I'm sure there was at least one takeaway or two takeaways from that game for you. And I just want to go there with that question. We've been doing this as a kind of a formula over the end of last season. So let's do that. We did have a game. It was of, you know, debatable import, but it was a victory. There was something to hold up in the air and jump around and get that feeling back, the Hendo Trophy lift. And we had a couple of moments in there. So I don't want to, again, go into any detail yet. I want to just ask you, what were the big takeaways from that game for you?
Well, you know, my perspective is a little bit different because I didn't watch it on the day. I was out of town last weekend and you know, didn't get to watch it and didn't necessarily even plan to watch it. But then when I found out that we had actually won the game and was, you know, seeing all these bits and pieces on social media of everything, I believe I asked you, Trev, I'm like, you know, is it worth the watch? And you said, oh, absolutely. So I sat down, you know, I guess it was like Monday, Tuesday, and did watch it. And I actually sat down and watched the first half and then, you know, went off and did some other things and then watched second half. But my overall take, and again, being a little skewed since I already knew the outcome, but it was just once again that kind of positive feeling that came off of, you know, the 5-0 win against, you know, Red Bull Leipzig, that, you know, we're ready for it. And, you know, these guys are ready for the season. And there's a lot of things to be excited about for the season.
Absolutely. And chief amongst them, of course, is getting to see new players. Who doesn't like that? And on the day, we had that little sort of head-to-head thing that was being built up so much in the build-up to the game by the media. The whole Haaland versus Nunez thing, or Nunez, I'll have to get used to saying that correctly. And to be fair, very, very silly talk about the performance of Haaland on the day. I thought he could easily have had a couple of goals on a different day. He didn't, as it turns out. He didn't get off the mark in that game. Armand did. And I'm sure, like myself, you enjoyed watching that very, very much. And he did look quite sharp and looked very much up for it, and like he fits into our system, Lisa Marie.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, Darwin looked great. I mean, I, you know, honestly, there wasn't, you know, and again, not maybe watching it quite the same way I might have otherwise, but there really wasn't anything to be disappointed about. And there was even more positive to take away from it, just because for whatever reason, it didn't click for Haaland that day. And, you know, I know you talked with Jan on your podcast yesterday about how it just gave us that little bit of psychological edge, which is what we wanted. You know, we talked last week about how we just didn't want it to work against us. And it certainly hasn't. I mean, it's worked for us and, you know, for the confidence, you know, just for Darwin Núñez and all the players who were on the pitch that day. So, I mean, even Adrián, if it turns out that, you know, he has to step in a little bit here and there, you know, if Kelleher's not back, I'm not raising him to the skies. I didn't say, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been. Okay. We've seen worse.
Yeah,
our glass is half full. Stop.
I remember the Aston Villa game, Lisa Marie.
Oh, I know. And I remember that one too. And I remember the whichever game it was that knocked us out of the Champions League in 2020. And, you know, I do. But I'm not saying I want him to start. I'm just saying, you know, it's all part of the whole. You know, it's all part of the whole that I see as a positive picture for us to kick off the season tomorrow.
Absolutely, and you know, obviously we're making jokes about the goalkeeper, but I do fully appreciate what you're saying there, because you know, at least it wasn't a fright show, and there were a few things that you could say. Well, okay, if we must, then we might be all right. And that topic is going to come back later on, because we do have to talk about the state of our squad going into the season. And part of that, of course, will be discussing the injuries that are currently afflicting that group. But Guy, just to give you a chance to talk briefly about that Community Shield thing. Now, you and I got to do the pod immediately afterwards, and it was just the two of us, as it turned out. And I heartily enjoyed the chat, because I think it was a very upbeat feeling that everybody had. And even in the live thing in Discord, people were just cracking jokes, and it was a really good sort of feel afterwards. I didn't even watch the trophy lift. I told you my stream crapped out. Yeah. I didn't see that until afterwards. It wasn't a thing that I gave a crap about, because I guess what I'm saying to you is that pretty much is the proof of the point that I was making. All I wanted was first that they would have no advantage, and then if we could, that we would. And it was very heartening from that perspective. But the thing, having watched the game, I thought it was a great game of football, and I thought it showed two ridiculously top level teams. And I wonder, I think I said it to you on the day, I wonder, did you think this as well? I don't think anyone who plays, who represents a rival team to Liverpool or Manchester City, will have gotten anything edifying out of that. In fact, I think they'll have gone, shit, because it did look like two teams who are bang at it, and a really high standard, just sort of seamlessly from one campaign to the next.
Well, that's the thing. I think if you watch not just the Community Shield, I think if you watch most of the Man City Liverpool games, when we're not missing all our centre backs and we don't have Henderson centre back, etc., they're all madly even. A team can win a goal either way. They can even tonk each other. But just the level of game, I don't think many teams in the world can match that. Now, I know Real Madrid beat both Liverpool and Man City, but I don't think Real Madrid could play a game like that. They obviously have their own tactics and moments of magic to beat a team like Liverpool or Man City, but in terms of performing like that in like a whole game, regardless of not just sitting back and hitting on the counter like I expect the Spurs to do, a Chelsea to do, or, well, Arsenal don't even try that because they can't, but I think the rest of the league would have watched that game and went, well, it's kind of a pre-season friendly, but they're still at a level that most teams can only dream of reaching, which is terrifying. I think if everyone's done the season previews on AI, on different medias and stuff like that, everyone's got Spurs third. I don't think they could reach that level. I don't think Conte would play like that. I think they've got players who could reach the world, like our world-class players. I mean, Son and Kane are undeniably world class, but I don't think as a team, and I like Conte as a manager, I think if Klopp left tomorrow he'd probably be top of my list. I think I've said that a few times. I don't think he would trust his Spurs team to play anything like that, to be honest. So yeah, if it was the rest of the league watching that game, he'd just be like, well, there's your top two. Job done. We'll fight for third and fourth and whatever else. That's how I feel. I think my only other main takeaway, and I think we discussed it, is that although Haaland did some funny stuff, he missed one really bad chance and missed a couple other somewhat half chances, maybe a bit more than that. But you could tell that there was a bit more. There's a bigger change at City than there is at Liverpool, because we've been playing with a striker, not a big number nine, not like a Torres or a whatever, but we've been playing with basically a striker for 18 months to 2 years now, because Bobby's not been a main starter for a little while though. So it's a lot less of a transition for us than it is City, and they've obviously lost Sterling and Jesus, whereas we lost Mane, who already lost his position in January because Diaz moved left wing. So I don't think it's a big transition for us. Now it's just whether Darwin can do striker Mane things, and that's I don't see that as a huge concern, because we all love Mane, but we only saw 4 months of striker Mane. He scored goals, but there were some performances where you were tearing your hair out. So I don't think it's that big game-changing thing. Like, I think I saw on the BBC, Jonathan Woodgate said Mane will be a huge miss. And I think he will be in some regards, but not in terms of his position on the pitch. I don't think he will be.
Let's actually just briefly on that topic just get a take from both of you on the two lads that we've been speaking about there, Haaland and Nunez. And like I said, there was entirely predictable and understandable stuff in the media, because what else are they going to do? You know, it's the big story. Of course, it was sticking in all of our craws where people were doing this lazy, you know, Nunez, the 100 million euro or pound man, and all this kind of stuff. That type of thing is indicative of the modern sort of media and modern journalism. It's narrative driven, and nobody really is too interested in the facts if there's a storyline that they can lean into, and stereotypes that they can perpetuate. We saw some of that today, tragically, in the whole issue around Mr. Tyler's little comments. But to talk about, well, it's going to be very difficult for him to roll that one back for a lot of people. But speaking on a more positive note, I happen to believe firmly that from what I'd seen of Haaland, I would have loved us to get to sign Haaland, because I think he has the potential to be a monster in our league, and I still think that he will be, and I say still, as if something has happened to show that he's not. It hasn't. You don't go by the, like, if Nunez had had a stinker, we'd be saying, well, it's the Community Shield. Who gives a shit? So let's be honest here. And Haaland was getting in positions. He was in the position to miss those couple of efforts. He should really have scored two or three. So I would be very, very much of the opinion that he's going to pull up trees, I think, this campaign, and will be really important for them to do so. I think you're very astute in pointing out, Guy, that it has been all changed. So Sterling, Jesus and Aguero were their main men. None of them are at the club. So this is going to have to work. So there will be pressure on that kid and those around him. So that in and of itself does stand to us, but I think he'll more than cope with the pressure. That's my personal prediction. And as regards Nunez, to give you my take before I get yours and then get Lisa Marie's, I listened to the Under Pressure podcast, and the two Dans were going with, I think, 23 and 28 goals, something like that. And Si Brundish was reckoning it'd be closer to 12 for Nunez this season. He was saying, let's not expect too much off the kid. It's settling in, all the rest of it. Now, I think personally, I'd be somewhere like the lads there love doing stats and medians. I reckon it might be somewhere in between the low ball that Si did and the higher number of 28. I think it could be somewhere right in the middle there. That would be my prediction for him for this year, because of the amount of games that we're going to play, because of the fact that most of the opposition that we come up against won't be of the level that we're at, and that he is a class act. So that's what I'm thinking. What are you thinking for Haaland, Guy, and for Nunez in a more sort of measured way now that we don't have to worry about the whole stupid tabloidy build-up? Just from what you've seen of them before and the feeling you get from the two clubs heading into the season, what would you predict would be how they'll go individually?
If my computer would let me unmute myself, there we go. I think Haaland's more dependent on fitness than anything, because we've seen at Dortmund the fitness let him down, and I still think he got above 20 goals in both seasons for Dortmund, or 2.5 seasons. I think he joined in the January the season previous. If he stays fit playing for Man City in the Premier League, I think Mo and Son shared Golden Boot with 23 last season in the Premier League. If you get above 18, I don't think you can complain. And if you get another, 10 or so in Champions League, and, well, if he ever plays the League Cup or whatever, if you're looking for about 30-odd in all comps in your first year in a new league, in a new system, new manager, etc., I don't think you can complain. Just for relevance, Jota in his first year for us got 13 goals in 30 games, but that was only in about 1700 minutes.
Yeah.
So, and I think Jota.
I was trying to remember Jota, so I'm glad you had that in hand.
Yeah, I frantically Googled it as my computer almost died. I think Jota got injured for a few months as well, because he scored a hat trick in the Champions League, then got injured, didn't he, or something like that?
Yeah. So yeah, I think he was injured like December, January, February ish, I remember.
So I think if Darwin stays injury free, 25 for the season, maybe in all comps. Because I think the thing with Haaland is he is defined Man City's only striker. Where at Liverpool, Darwin, if we want to mix it up, we'll go Bobby. If we want reliability, we'll play Jota. If we just want to go mental, maybe we put Mo through the middle. We won't, but just options there. Whereas Haaland, I think he's one of one, whereas Darwin's probably one of three. So I think Haaland will outscore him this season. But long term, depending on how long they actually stay at Man City and Liverpool, I think they'll both be monsters. Like I've only seen the games against us for Darwin, and obviously pre-season, but just his movement and relentlessness, it's just something we've not really seen. I mean, not in the centre areas, because we've had Bobby for so long, but he does have traits of Mane and Salah where he just doesn't stop. And we don't miss. We do not miss. So I'll aim for 25 in all comps this season for Darwin, but long term, it's hard to say more numbers, but if he gets 30 to 35 every season once he's settled in, nobody will remember the price after that.
That's for sure. I mean, and again, you know, you can only go off the feelings you have and the limited exposure we've had to the guy. And people are very quick to point out he's only had one good season, blah, 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 whatever. But I would share those optimistic notions myself. And Lisa Marie, when you look at those two guys and what you think the impact they're going to have would be, would you be along the same lines as Guy there, thinking that there's a good chance both of them will start in a very impressive way?
I do. I agree with what Guy was saying. I think with Haaland, yes, it's going to be dependent on his fitness. And yeah, he can, you know, if he stays fit through the season and, you know, and clicks, you know, right away with City's, you know, system of play and everything, yeah, he could easily get 30 plus in all competitions. And I think the same for Darwin. I think, you know, we're already seeing that, you know, he's fitting in and linking up and everything else. And I think it's just a matter of time, you know, that, you know, he and Trent learn how to, you know, connect with each other and, you know, Trent's lay some of those crosses for him to knock in. I think he's probably going to be 20 plus this season and only has, both of them, they're so young. I mean, they have so much of their career ahead of them that, you know, if you're comparing to Mo, who, you know, is 30, not that that's old by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, they've got more of their career ahead of him than Mo does, and they absolutely can reach his levels, if not higher.
Yeah, which is, you know, pretty scary. Right. And yeah, and I think most people are, just based on the preseason energy and focus and determination, the fact that he's had a rest, I think most people are looking at Mo this year and thinking he could actually have his best campaign ever. So yeah. I mean, it's exciting no matter where you sit, I think. And from that point of view, one of the only things that people talk about all summer obviously is who's coming and who's going. And there's us. We've just literally been focusing on the big signing for the two biggest clubs who we expect to be challenging each other for the title this season. But as you looked around the league, and obviously it's ongoing and it will be for a while yet, is there anything that struck you in terms of any of the rivals or any other Premier League clubs who don't necessarily come into that direct rival category where you thought, oh, that's actually very interesting or very good business, or maybe a different thing, maybe what is going on there? Because I found some of the moves that have been made quite fascinating, I have to say. And Guy, just to start with you on this, I heard you speak to Dave on the transfer pod about the Cucurella move, and your sort of almost disbelieving chuckle as you were talking about the wages that kid is being given at Chelsea. It felt exactly what I was thinking. It seems like they're starting Chelsea to do that throwing shit at the wall thing, and it's certainly given the lie, isn't it, Guy, to the whole, oh well, if what happens if Abramovich goes, I mean, there'll be a fire sale, and most of us who have any sense at all were going, you're talking shit. Like, literally, it seemed like all of Twitter was saying, oh, there's going to be a fire sale, we can have our pick, we can, let's bring Sterling home and for pennies on the dollar, and all that crap was going on. But I don't know, maybe I'm just a cynical man, but I just knew they were going to have loads of money and nothing could happen there. And they seem to just, like I say, be at that stage where they're starting to fire money at the wall. Maybe there's a little bit of desperation. That Cucurella one, I'm not 100% sure, but maybe he'll end up being fantastic for them. But it seems an odd one for me if he's going to play in the position that he has played in for the most part for Brighton. So that one for me is a bit of an eyebrow raiser where I'm starting to look and wonder. Of course, Man United have supplied endless stories over the summer, not necessarily in their transfer business to date. The Frankie de Jong thing remains to be seen what happens there. That could well be the story of the summer in terms of
to Chelsea, apparently.
over the course of today,
it's pretty, I think it broke, well, not broke, it's talk spot, so touch all the wood in your room.
I was going to say, yeah.
But I think, I don't know if it's just like Barcelona bullshit, but he's publicly, they say Chelsea's one of the teams he'd join, and they do need a midfielder because Jorginho is shit. And they are mental. All they've got to do is match Man United's offer, and if he goes, yeah. But
well, I mean, honestly, it's a bit of a win-win for us all of this. Like, oh, I said, it's pure popcorn. But like, just to tee up the question, then,
yeah.
What is it for you? Well, you've had a look around. You've seen some of the moves. I know you've been talking about them, and I know you produce Dave's show, so he's doing that every day. So you're keeping an eye on the news there as well. What's taken your eye in terms of impressive or what the hell is going on there type business by anybody else in the Premier League?
Just before we do this, I mean, the most eye-catching thing I've seen this summer is Rob Green predicting Man United to finish second in the Premier League.
You gotta love the optimism.
Yes, you do. And I he must be a United fan, surely. I'm not sure if it's eye-catching, but I think Spurs, other than the Richarlison deal, have done quite well. Like, I think Bissouma for 25 mil is probably the best signing of the summer. Value for money, one of the best midfielders in the league. I think even us, maybe City less so because they play different to us, but I've seen that lad boss Liverpool's midfield on his own, Arsenal's midfield on his own. Now he's going to Spurs with better players around him. I think that could be really good. But in terms of the bad, I mean, that Cucurella, the thing is, I like Cucurella. He's probably, off the top of my head, third best left back in the league. But he did play centre back quite a bit for Brighton as well. So, but 62 or 55 million with add ons, if we go that way, 55 to 62 mil for a left back or a left centre back, which isn't his natural position, is mental, as you say. But I do like the player. Richarlison for 60 mil. Bleh, God. Was he that good at Everton, other than keeping him up? Like, he did well for 2 months of the season, but he was pretty crap otherwise.
But given your opinion of that manager, I mean, he must see something there, right?
So, well, that's the thing, yeah. That's true.
You know? So
he's a horrid bastard as well.
He's awful. And you know what? He just gives me one more reason to hate Tottenham. So, you know, it works out.
Yeah. Well, actually, let me cut across you there, guy, as you're throwing a few things out there, and I can bring you in this, Lisa Marine. Obviously, feel free to give me your take on anything that's taken your eye as well. But we've talked about Spurs. Arsenal are doing a lot of business. I mean, a lot of business in terms of squad shaping and changing. I mean, so many people have gone out from Arsenal. Mm-hmm. Lacazette's gone. They've lost in terms of people that we would definitely, names that people know, Guendouzi's gone. They have lost Nuno Tavares as well. Bernd Leno's gone.
In January.
And Aubameyang looks to be going as well. So in terms of the business they've done, bringing in Marquinhos, Fabio Vieira, Matt Turner from New England Revolution, they've got Gabriel Jesus, who again, I think, listen to Dave, was it 3 out of 5 guys on This Is Anfield doing their predictions reckoned that he would be the signing of the season, which is an interesting one. And of course, Zinchenko as well from City to Arsenal. Now, Lisa Marie, you can say what you like about the cringe level of some of the Arsenal videos that have been released, and it's high. And my own personal opinion of that manager is the opposite; it's quite low. But I will say this: that's quite a squad refresh, and some of those guys could really do a bit of a job. So maybe they're one of the teams. And again, a lot of people are predicting them for top four. I'm just going to tee you up there. Feel free to say nothing about Arsenal if you don't want to. But also then do lead out of whatever you do say into anything else that's taken your eye transfer-wise, anything you thought was interesting.
Yeah, as to Arsenal, I mean, I think there's a lot of really good players. But it'll be interesting to see how they work. You know, if this were coming into, you know, a Klopp team or a Pep team, I think it would work very well. But as you said, my opinion per se on Arsenal's manager is not as high. So I don't know that he will, you know, how well he's going to be able to integrate all of that talent. So it'll just be interesting to see, you know, if they can get it to click properly, then yeah, they could be a really interesting team to watch this season. I also like Cucurella. I always enjoyed watching him play. And I mean, does anyone in the league have a better head of hair? I mean, it's great.
Absolutely.
but that's just insane money for him. I can't, but Chelsea is starting. I mean, it's like, are they taking a page out of Man United's book? I mean, let's just throw big money at all these players and I don't know. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how all of that ends up. Because again, they've got some great players in this season, but how is it all going to work? So it'll just be interesting to see that. I'm trying to think, you know, because it's one of these where I pay attention and I've listened to a lot of these transfer pods, but sometimes it all kind of goes in one ear and out the other. And plus there's so much where you hear like, I mean, you know, Cucurella forever he was going to Man City. He was going to Man City. Man City was going to get him. And, you know, I mean, in fact, to the point where I thought that was a done deal because it was being said so often. And then I actually had to look it up one day because I'm like, wait a minute, that went quiet. Did that happen or didn't it happen? Of course, it didn't. And now, you know, turn around and you know, he's at Chelsea as of today. So it's they don't call it silly season for nothing, I suppose.
They don't. And without then asking you to, because it is a bit scattershot, there's so many clubs. Let me focus your attention on Everton.
Yes, please focus me.
I'm going to focus your attention on Everton because we always like to focus our attention on Everton purely for the comedy value. And they have seen, as Guy said, Richarlison go out. I think John Joe Kenny left as well. In terms of other players that people would know, not too many names there that would be notable. They've taken in James Tarkowski from Burnley and Dwight McNeil from Burnley as well as Vinagre from Sporting. But it's the two Burnley lads that I'd like to focus on, because I have to say, when I heard those two coming, you know, especially now the current iteration of McNeil, where he had been this really exciting guy a couple of years ago and then maybe, well, definitely wasn't that impressive last time out. And Tarkowski just has this total Everton feel to him as well. But I have to say, both of those things could end up being solid-ish signings. And yet, you look at the setup there, you look at the guy who's patrolling the touchline, and it's hard to see it working out. What do you think of that business in terms of their incomings, there, those three guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, for the incomings, you know, especially the two center backs, I think that's good for them. I think, you know, that's moving them in a positive direction. However, as you alluded to, you know, the person who's leading that team, you know, our buddy Frank, you know, I don't have a lot of confidence that he's going to be able to pull that together and to make it work for them. Now, I could be wrong. But you know, he just, and it's not so much that he may not have the ability as a manager, but just the bits and pieces I've seen that when it starts going wrong, he just tends to throw his players under the bus, and it's, who wants to rally for that? So I don't know. I think Everton is going to be interesting to watch again this year from a sit back and, you know, with my bowl of popcorn kind of thing, and just sort of see what entertainment they provide us. Not necessarily on the field, but off the field as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the sitcom we all want to watch. And Guy, just in relation to what Lisa Marie said, to kind of bring us back full circle to where we started a couple of minutes ago, you know, no doubt Frankie the Tory will be one of the people who will be high on the list in terms of the chances of them getting the sack. You'd imagine, unless something strange happens there, the club culture changes, the manager becomes proficient in some way. But another man who was struggling with that kind of pressure is the Arsenal manager. And then I don't know whether it's because he was the Guardiola disciple, because he's got history with the club, with Arsenal. They bore with him. And now there's, at times last year, there were things being said about him. I couldn't really equate the high opinion that was being expressed about him with what I was ever seeing and what he seems to be. But maybe I'm getting it wrong and maybe I'm being harsh. However, he is, like so many other managers before him and clubs before him, now on display in a way that I don't think is particularly helpful in this all or nothing documentary. I'm just going to tee it up with this question. If there was the option of that documentary being made about Liverpool, would your curiosity to see behind the scenes overwhelm your desire to say, please God, no, never do this?
Well, Klopp said he'd leave if we did it, so no. But in terms of just in curiosity.
What have you made of what you've seen so far of the little clips that we've seen from the Arsenal version of this? We've seen Spurs did it. It was a Spurs one before. And who else was? This is the third one. City, of
Man
course.
City did it. Well, and Leeds did it or something similar as well a couple of years ago.
Them and Sunderland did the Netflix one, I think.
Netflix.
Oh, okay. That's it. I know I watched the Leeds one when they came back into the Premier League just because I really didn't know much about them as a team. So I did sit and watch that one to kind of familiarize myself.
What did you think of the clips you've seen, Guy? I mean, we all saw the cringe one with the blasting out, you'll never walk alone. I mean,
it worked well. Worked well, that one.
Like, it's kind of, what are they thinking, isn't it? Really, like, it's got this heavy office Curb Your Enthusiasm cringe levels where you're going, oh God, you know, it's just
Trev. There's worse scenes. Do you both agree with me? When you thought of Mikel Arteta, you thought it was just Pep Guardiola. He was going to be very socially awkward. He was going to basically be the uptight teacher figure where he's all about professionalism and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
He's David fucking Brent.
I know. Did you see this? Did you see the one where he gets the club photographer in to give the speech?
Oh,
God.
I've seen all three episodes now. Right, so they worded it. He does a team talk an hour before the game, then does a proper team talk before the action, like just before the game, as you'd expect. He gets out like a whiteboard or one of them flip piece of paper over things, and he doodles a heart with a smiley face in it, and then doodles a brain with a smiley face in it, and says, "You have to be brave and you have to be smart."
Oh my God. Oh, I can't wait to see this, and yet I may never watch it. That sounds so bad, and yet so entertaining.
Other than that, it's pretty boring. Like, the Spurs one, maybe, and the Man City, I didn't watch all the City one because I got bored. But the Spurs one, like, some of the players came off quite interesting. Danny Rose came off as a bit of a Doyle. But all the Arsenal ones come off like really boring and like overly media trained. They're all quite young as well, to be fair, so they might just actually be nervous. Whereas Mikel Arteta has come out as this main character fucking from The Office, and I just never thought he'd be this. I thought he'd be like one of those overly serious people where. It's not the same as what if you have watched the Spurs one. Mourinho was fantastic in the Spurs one.
Oh yeah, I watched a couple episodes of the Spurs one. Mourinho,
he was so interesting. he was worth it. Whereas Arteta, he is literally like watching The Office. It's just from the awkwardness of that. I don't know how many. If it's 10 episodes, I will watch 10 hours of just cringe. It's fantastic.
All right, I'm all in. I wasn't sure if I could do it, but that sounds great.
Trev, why don't we coordinate our watch and we can comment back and forth on
Do you know what? That's actually a great idea. We should do that, yeah, because I'd imagine it's a far better experience to share. All right, let's wrap it up, folks, because I'm just after looking at the clock, of course. We do like to talk, and we've got about 8 minutes or so left to keep this to a tight hour, which we're going to try and do, so it's predictable for people. And we are going to try, I think, as well, to stick to our Friday evening with, you know, absolute scant regard for whatever games are coming up, because as anyone who looks at our fixtures will be able to tell you, Liverpool are always playing football. After about 3 weeks' time, just Liverpool are playing football. There will be a Liverpool game on within 48 hours of any given moment you look. So Friday, we're going to try to keep to, so that you guys who are listening and who do actually follow the show and like the show will have that sort of familiarity and routine that, you know, you'll wake up on a Saturday morning, maybe they have a game and you want something to distract you before. So you don't have to watch the mind-numbing Sky analysis. You might be able to listen to us talking nonsense. So that's what we're going to try and do. And with the view to keeping the length of the show very regular as well, let's finish with a little bit of chat about the fact that the season is starting tomorrow, that we are up against Fulham. I'm not going to put either of you in the spot and ask you to talk about Fulham specifically, because honestly, most people, if they're being honest, won't have a huge amount of knowledge about them outside of the big things, the swagger with which they came up. They've taken in a few people.
They got Shane Duffy
over the line, who will probably start. They got Bernd Leno from Arsenal. Kevin Mbabu from Wolfsburg. Andreas Pereira came from United there, and João Paulinho from Sporting. So that's the big incomings for them. They had to let go Fabio Carvalho to us. Obviously, Cyrus Christie used to play for them on the regular. Fabry, Alfie Mawson, Jean-Michel Seri, who, again, like I said to Jan last night, was the lad who famously got chilblains because he didn't like the cold in England, which is... I found that a remarkable story back in the time, and Steven Sessegnon as well has gone out on loan. So as I was looking at the squad and the makeup of the squad, if we're being perfectly honest, and this is not entitlement and it's certainly not laziness, but it's a thing that has come to be the case because of the wonderful squad building at our club by our manager, his recruitment team, and the work that they've done with the people that we have. We are now in a situation where there are no games, almost no games, where you go into them and think, well, they're clearly superior to us, so we're going to be relying on X, Y, and Z. This is a new era, and it has been for a while now, where most games you can look at things on paper and you will say, well, clearly we should win this game. That's just the reality of being part of Liverpool, whether it's support or a player or wherever at this stage. It's a lovely reality. You can't take it for granted. People obviously do. You can't get entitled. People obviously do. But there's no point in being stupid and not acknowledging that that is the situation. And if you look at these two squads, we should do a number on these guys tomorrow. We should beat them by a couple of goals. That is how it should work out. Do you get the feeling that it will? And Guy, I'm going to start with you because it's a little bit coloured by some of the injuries that we've had. We were worried about the Curtis situation, and now it seems it's going to be a couple of weeks to a month. Ibu Konate, everyone thought was going to be fine, but now he's going to be a month as well. Immediately, that's not good. We have other people with various knocks as well. Jota is going to be out for a while. He can't start the season. None of that is what you'd like. And again, listen to the under pressure guys talking about loads and minutes and all that kind of thing. You know, we are going to be reliant on some of the old heads, and that doesn't suit a lot of our fans as well. But as you look at this specific game, and we're not going to talk about it in much detail, and the ones that are coming after it. So again, the fixtures that we have after it, what's our second game this season? Before United is our third. So we Fulham, then
Palace, I think.
Is it Crystal Palace?
Palace,
yeah.
Palace, then
we
United.
Have two Mondays back to back.
Yeah, so it's Fulham, Palace, United, and then to see August out, I think the last game could be the last day, is it?
I know
it?
We played Bournemouth on the 27th.
Yeah, I thought it was...
Or did it get moved?
Yeah, I thought it was, oh my God, Newcastle to see the month out. I think they're the four games. Looking at that, Guy, do you find yourself confident that we can do what we're going to need to do, which is to take as close to maximum points in those opening games as possible if we want to be in a situation to win the league? And now that's our reality now. Do you find yourself upbeat about that?
It's Bournemouth, then Newcastle, just to clear that up.
I was going
to
say, we were both right, Trev.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go.
Max points.
Really? Based on what, man? That simple thing that I was saying, that we're just better than other people?
Other teams are shit, we're good.
You see... I mean, like, this is the type of in-depth analysis.
I was going to say, Guy Drinkle comes in with the in-depth analysis.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's an IP. It's the end of the week. Can I be asked?
We're only the 25th podcast you've been on this week.
I'm all in on that because that's basically boiled down version of what I'm thinking as well. Like, and again, it doesn't come from a place of entitlement at all. Lisa Marie, like, I mean, I know you're a little bit more circumspect probably than Guy, but I also know that you're very, very positive and tend to have that positive outlook. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you've got to be looking at the opening of this season and thinking, okay, so we should be able to do Fulham quite comfortably. We should be able to have a right goal at Crystal Palace at our place. We should be able to go to Man United and do a number on them, and then Bournemouth and Newcastle. Yeah, there's a good chance there that we should make a very, very solid start this season, and will, because of the amount of fantastic footballers that we have and the culture that's at the club and the way that we play and all that kind of thing. I find myself hoping that's going to be the case and very confident that it will be. How are you looking at those opening fixtures of the year?
No, I concur. I think we have every reason to believe that, you know, we take full points from, you know, the games in August. It's, you know, there's, yeah, you know me, glass is half full. But yeah, I think we have every reason to believe we will. I can't think of a reason, you know, why we wouldn't expect that to happen, you know, from what we're, you know, from what we know that we have within this team and, you know, with one eye looking to what those teams are putting together, you know, at this point in the season, I absolutely expect us to take all points from those matches. And I hope very, very much hope I'm right.
Well, we have the opportunity to watch our team tomorrow. We're recording this,
yes,
as we will be doing on a
very early in the morning for me.
Very, very, very early in the morning for you. But it will be 12:30 GMT at Craven College. We get our season underway and it's very exciting. If you go to the official website now, I can see that it's actually only 16 hours and 22 minutes away. That's just about as close to the season starting as you can get in terms of us doing a podcast before. Let's hope that when we speak next, which will be next Friday, we'll have something to look forward to. And as Guy said earlier on, we won't have a game then until the Monday, which is that game at home to Palace. So our show will probably have a little bit more about them and be able to look at how they did in their opening game. And looking back on the Fulham game and that kind of stuff, I love this part of the year because we actually have proper games to talk about, things to reflect on, things to look forward to based on those things we're reflecting on. This is where it gets good. This is where hopefully our channel comes back into its own. So I want to start wrapping it up and thank Guy and thank Lisa Marie for this opening podcast, this opening AIP of this season, a very enjoyable chat as always. We could do 2-3 hours here easy. It's always me trying to cut across these poor people as they're making points and keep us online for the hour or so roughly. But before we go, let me just ask if either if you have anything that you want to refer to, plug or finish off with. So Lisa Marie, I'll start with you. Anything you want to just flag up before we go?
No, just everyone enjoy the game tomorrow. As I said, very early for me, so I will be watching with fresh brewed coffee. Enjoy the beverage of your choice.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's the most appropriate one for that time of the day with you. Just so people get a proper picture there. 12:30 our time is what time for you?
That would be 6:30 a.m.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
No sleeping in for me on the Saturday morning.
No sleeping in for you on the Saturday. By the way, I'm aware that people will be listening to this who'll be getting up at like 3 a.m. and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yes.
And who do? And you know, God bless you all. It's one of the best parts of the AI broader community that is listening to those stories. I've always loved listening to that and listening to the dedication and sort of shaking my head at people's dedication to supporting their team. And Guy, last thought for you, if there's anything you want to wrap up with.
Just saying, I stayed up till 6 a.m. last Saturday, so I know how it feels. I was watching UFC, but it doesn't matter.
I was going to say, weren't you watching? Yeah.
Yes.
I saw you posting. I'm like, why is he still up?
Yeah, you've done that to me recently as well.
Oh, well, yes, I have.
Are you still awake?
We're grown up, we can stay up as long as we want.
Exactly, yeah. So on that note, these three adults will speak to you next week. Thanks to Guy, thanks to Lisa Marie. I've been Trev Denny. This is the Anfield Index podcast. If you're new to it, don't be new to it anymore. Come back to us. If you like the show, go and share it. And please, spread the word about the channel and the various other delights that are available on Anfield Index and Anfield Index Pro. We'll speak to you soon.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.